Four arguments this morning. The first is number 21-2138, Sonova AG versus Med-El Electro. Mr. Cernel. Go ahead.
May it please the court, Mark Cernel on behalf of Sonova. This is an appeal about an invention whose novel feature was described as revolutionary, a fundamental design shift from all of the prior art, a design approach that revolutionized cochlear implants at the time it was implemented. These were the words of Appellee Med-El when they implemented the novel feature into their product.
Can I just double check something? All of that language was about the product with the magnets in a casing, right, that allowed the free rotation in an MRI, and the casing is not part of the claim here, right?
I believe that that language actually ties directly to the use of a diametric magnet.
But it's the diametric magnet plus the casing that allows the rotatability, right?
Again, I think you'd have to have it inside the implant, inside a casing, to have it in the implant at all or have it rotate. But we can point to, and if you'd like me to just give a couple of examples now, when it talks about the fundamental design shift, this is Appendix 1932.
But it all has to do with rotatability, right?
I don't think it does. And if, for example, Appendix 1932, a fundamental design shift was the direction of the magnetization of the implant's internal magnet, diametric instead of axial. When they launched the product, they didn't call out rotatability. They said, unlike other cochlear implants, this is Appendix 1928. It uses a diametric magnet. Their Appendix 1482, what makes the Med-El Synchrony cochlear implant design unique? And the first thing they say, they hit upon the idea of a diametric magnet. And so I think when you look carefully at all of this evidence, and again, it comes up in the secondary considerations, but I think it answers directly the question of whether a diametric magnet is obvious. It is specifically calling out diametric magnet, not just simply talking about the product, not talking just about rotatability, calling out the diametric magnet specifically, and there's more than that. So what I think happened here is that the board failed to faithfully follow this court's precedent, developed to guard against the temptation of using hindsight to find obviousness. The board made legal errors in both the prima facie analysis as well as the consideration of the secondary indicia, some of which we just talked about, and fell into the trap of using hindsight to construct an obviousness combination. So what was that combination? The Dormer reference was the primary reference. That's a cochlear implant reference. We acknowledge that's analogous art to the Schmid patent. 1982 patent. What's important about that is, one, where it uses its magnets, they're all axially aligned. And then two, the reason it's being used in the obviousness combination is they're relying on the ring embodiment. And as your honors know from looking at Dormer, there's a single sentence mentioning this ring. It talks about other things that might be feasible, mentions the ring embodiment.
I thought the ring embodiment didn't show whether it was actually or diametrically magnetized.
So the ring embodiment, again, is mentioned in a single sentence.
No, but am I correct?
What I would say is this court's case law suggests that we need to look at the references.
No, you're not answering my question. I ask you a simple question. The ring embodiment in Dormer doesn't show whether it's axially or diametrically magnetized.
Correct. There are no details describing the ring embodiment.
You have to answer the question, not some other question that you'd like to talk about.
So I would agree with Your Honor, there is no discussion of the details of the magnetization of the ring embodiment. In fact, no details at all about that embodiment. But this court's case law tells us that we need to look at a reference as a whole. And when we look at the reference as a whole, all of the embodiments where there is detail provided has that detail showing an axially aligned magnet. And in fact, when we look at the prior art as a whole, the entire landscape of prior art, all cochlear implants, all hearing implants, all implantable devices, according to Med-El, all used axially aligned magnets for this transcutaneous communication function, for a holding function of an implant and then an external device that it's communicating with. And so to suggest that somehow this is a design choice type of situation where a person of skill in the art would have had multiple choices that they would have thought about and selected one as the preference for a particular situation is just totally inconsistent with the record of both Dormer as well as the entire landscape of prior art, which only used axially aligned magnets. And then, so what was the combination? The combination was looking at Dormer and then saying, okay, let's use the diametric magnet from Goldberg. But how does Goldberg, again, a 1970s reference, using a magnet for a completely different purpose than this transcutaneous communication function, this holding function to hold coils in place? It's using a magnet as essentially a wrench to turn a heart pacemaker potentiometer, and it's not sort of attached and then creating any kind of electrical signal or communication. It's simply a wrench that turns the potentiometer and changes something. So Dormer is not, or Goldberg is not solving any problem or even using the magnet in the same way that Dormer does. It is for a completely different purpose. And so what the board did is to say, okay, well, we take Goldberg's diametric magnet and then apply that to Dormer. I would suggest, again, this is not a design choice type of case. The ring embodiment is just simply a throwaway sentence at the end of the reference. Dormer teaches axial. The question would a person skilled in the art be motivated to change Dormer, change this axial alignment that, again, was universal throughout?
Is that really the language? We wouldn't ordinarily use the language of picking one teaching of a single piece of prior art as changing the prior art.
I think it's a modification.
A modification if the axial embodiment doesn't show whether it's axially or diametrically magnetized. It's providing an approach of magnetization that's missing.
Again, it's a single
is
sentence.
Is that not correct?
I would suggest that this court's case law says
Dormer
and Toto.
I didn't ask about the case law. I asked you, it's supplying a magnetization that's missing in Dormer.
It is absolutely missing in Dormer. Dormer says nothing about diametric magnetization.
Or axial for the ring embodiment.
Correct. But it certainly teaches axial. Like, again, for decades, all cochlear implants used axial. All hearing implants, all implantable devices used axial to create this alignment for a transcutaneous communication device. And so we're going against the entire grain of prior art. The board even found that it went against the conventional wisdom of using axially aligned magnets to then go to diametric with Goldberg. And again, Goldberg is not using it in the same way. It's using it as a wrench. And so this combination that the board comes up with, we would suggest, is in fact all drawbacks and no benefits. And so this court's case law suggests that when we look at an obviousness combination, there needs to be motivation, there needs to be desirability shown in terms of why would someone have done this at the time. And with the ring embodiment, if we think about this, it's actually undisputed, and the board found that to start with the ring is going to be outside the coils of the cochlear implant. And so just starting out with the ring, you're getting something that's bigger in terms of a footprint than when you put the magnet inside the coils. And so we would suggest a person of skill in the art wouldn't even be motivated to start with the ring embodiment. And I understand that this court's case law hasn't really answered that question of whether the starting point, you need to show motivation and desirability at the starting point. We would suggest the proper reading of the case law does support that, where you need to look at things, all steps of the obviousness analysis from the perspective of a person of skill. And this court's case law also says, and has reminded WBIP, Personal Web v. Apple, saying that the motivation and desirability needs to be shown for picking out the references and combining them, selecting the references and combining them. I would suggest that a person of skill in the art would not have been motivated, not find it desirable, to use this ring embodiment where you're starting out with something that's increasing the size of something you're putting between the skin and the skull.
Are you making an argument of teaching away here?
Not a teaching away. And again, there's no teaching away evidence here because No one was thinking about diametric at the time. Again, we've got decades of prior art. We've got 1970s, 1980s reference for a patent that's then 2002. No one is mentioning diametric as an option, and so there's no teaching away of diametric because it wasn't even in anyone's mind. And so then this question of, is it obvious, is it desirable to go from the ring in Dormer and supply the diametric of Goldberg? And I would suggest that, again, that's just all drawbacks, no benefits, no showing of desirability by the board.
Drawbacks? That sounds like teaching away. What's the drawback?
Well, there's all drawbacks in terms of the motivation. And so, again, no one thought to do this, no one did it.
What do you mean drawbacks?
Drawbacks in terms of size. It was undisputed that obviously when you have an implant you're putting in someone's head.
In terms of size, it doesn't have to do with drawbacks of diametric magnetization, right?
So if you have something, if you...
No. Yes, no.
Can you repeat the question, please?
You really need to listen. The question is, there's no drawback to using diametric magnetization.
I believe there is, and the reason is because you need a larger magnet to achieve the same holding strength of the diametric magnet as compared to an axial magnet.
Wasn't there a factual dispute about, if not the existence of the greater strength, the significance in this particular context of the needed greater strength because of the way the field lines are slightly different?
I think there may have been some disagreement in the record, but we pointed to, and if you look at appendix...
And didn't the board say, we just don't see that this is a significant enough...
I think what the board said, and I think you may be referring to appendix 31, footnote 10, where it talked about how the ring is going to already be creating a larger implant. Again, we would suggest that's showing there would be no motivation to do that. And then suggesting that there wasn't any evidence in the record as to how much bigger it might need to be. Of course, we're doing a hypothetical combination here, and so there's no way to judge a particular hypothetical because there's no finite discussion of it. But if you look at, for example, appendix 1969, post the Schmid patent, Medel, in its own patent, talks about how diametric requires, quote, significantly greater size implant magnet to achieve the required amount of magnetic attraction. It was estimated, this is appendix 1970 and then appendix 1766 and 67, 30%+ greater size. And so we have something that's going to be significantly greater size. We're putting it on top, you know, inside a person's head, and there's no benefit, zero benefit. The one thing that the board mentioned as a possible benefit, and the way the board talked about it was potentially retaining the benefit of a specific predetermined alignment of the external with the implant. And the point was there were other embodiments in Dormer that already had that benefit. And so what we have here is we're making a choice to bring diametric in for the ring embodiment where there's no added benefits and only drawbacks. It's a bigger implant, which everybody agrees. It's undisputed in the record that bigger is worse in the context of putting an implant into a person's body with no benefits. And this court...
That sounds like a classic teaching away argument. But you're not making that argument, perhaps because you don't have any evidence of teaching away.
Again, I guess I think there's sort of a temporal difference there. Teaching away is at the time.
You're saying it's all drawback and no benefit,
right?
Isn't that teaching away?
I think it's the motivation to combine, and whether there's motivation to combine and whether there's desirability of the combination. We say that is lacking. There is not substantial evidence, and the board made legal errors in making the motivation to combine the desirability conclusion. I don't go the step of saying teaching away, because teaching away would suggest there's an option that people are contemplating, and it says don't go there. We don't have evidence of that. We just have evidence saying why no one was even thinking about going there at the time.
Is it the case that if you're using the ring embodiment and you want to have predetermined alignment that you have to use diametric magnetization to do that?
I don't think you need to, and in fact, the figure five embodiment in Dormer is a way of doing it without having diametric.
It's not a ring embodiment.
Correct.
So my question was, in order to have the ring embodiment and predetermined alignment, is it the case that you have to use diametric magnetization?
I could probably imagine, I don't think there's any evidence in the record answering that question, I could imagine a way that I think you could probably put a ring together where you're sort of putting different pieces together where you create that benefit without having to go with diametric.
I thought the, I don't know, the handbook, the manual or something, the page that shows 12 or 13 different...
31, yeah.
Is that they, even in at least one ring embodiment, it shows magnetization essentially. I don't know if you had a ring sitting like a disc, magnetization going this way rather than this way.
Yeah, I think that, again, in the general art of magnets, there are ways to do it.
You mentioned one thing about size. I just wanted to ask you about, is it true that, might it be the case or is it necessarily the case that axially aligned sort of linear things like this, that those would stick out more than disks that are essentially sitting flat on the surface, or is that not true?
Well, again, the way the prior art did it was axially aligned in a disk. It's just sort of two pancakes on top of one another as opposed to two slices of a pizza.
Okay.
I think
you're out of time. Unless there are further questions, we'll give you 2 minutes for a follow-up.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Timbers?
Good morning, Your Honors. Kerry Timbers for Med-El. May it please the Court, Your Honor.
Take your mask off if you want.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. This is a classic case of two experts disagreeing with each other, and a classic case of a fact finder deciding that one expert was credible and that the other was not. One expert, Med-El's, said that this was desirable, it was effective, it was simple. The other expert said the opposite. The board was very clear in looking at both.
The combination was desirable. Why did he say the combination was desirable?
He said it was desirable because the, as one of the questions from Your Honors pointed out, the ring magnet would not work with axial. It would work with diametric magnetization. If the ring magnet had axial magnetization all the way through it, it does not achieve the ability to align the magnet in any way. It's just the same all the way around. The key to Dormer was that it would be different on one side than the other. And the diametric magnetization does that.
Would one, I don't have it in front of me, but in the handbook, would one example listed in the handbook or otherwise have a ring in which, say, only 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock would be magnetized at all, but they would each be magnetized axially, not diametrically?
In other words, if you had...
Most of it is dead.
Yes. You would have to have opposite axial on the ring.
Isn't that one of the things shown?
And that would work. I'm not...
So that would not work?
No, that would... I believe that would work. If you only had two, if you have more than two, then you get into difficulty because you need one specific orientation. So axial could work in that way. One of the problems here is the pot core, and putting the axial magnetization on the outside of the pot core could cause problems with that. And that's why the expert for Med-El said that the diametric magnetization was desirable. He actually used that term.
Could you show us where he talked about this?
Yes. So, in appendix at 732 and 733, paragraph 76, which is cited by the board. It talks about Dormer teaching all the elements of the connecting device. And at the bottom of 732, it says the positive would have recognized the simplest configurations, such as shown in the first row of Moskowitz, are sufficient to hold one magnet to the second magnet. Of these, the across diameter configuration is the most desirable to a posita, since it provides angular orientation when paired, as in Goldberg figure 5. And on this same page, he addresses something extremely important under KSR, because at the bottom of 77, after explaining the diametrically magnetized ring magnets, he says a posita would have known from Goldberg and basic magnetics that the diametrically magnetized ring magnets were a known workable option from among a finite number of predictable solutions. Such product design is straightforward, following the teachings of Dormer and the knowledge in the art, not innovation. And this, basically, I would argue, is KSR. There was a design need, as Your Honor's questions showed. Dormer talks about a ring magnet, but does not provide any magnetization for it. And the fact that the other embodiments, which are not a ring magnet, are axial, does not mean that inherently they're disclosing axial magnetization. They're not disclosing any magnetization. So the design need is, well, what magnetization should we use? And the expert is showing that given the knowledge and experience of a posita, this would be the obvious and desirable option among a finite number of options. This is exactly the language from KSR.
My problem is that while it may be that your expert said that, I'm not sure that the board agreed with that. They seem to have said there was a finite number of choices, or, you know, simple design choice seemed to be their reasoning, rather than there being advantages to the diametric approach. Am I mistaken about that?
Well, the board does cite paragraph 77 in its decision. It actually cites all of these paragraphs that I've pointed to, 76 and 77, and it says that the expert was credible and that it is making its decision for the reasons proposed by petitioner.
Where does it, which page does that say that?
All right. So, Your Honors, at appendix 32, which is page 32 of the board's decision, at the top, it's about a third of the way down. It talks about petitioner's arguments based upon Dormer and Goldberg, and specifically cites paragraph 76 and 77 exhibit 1002, which is Dr. Trumper's declaration. So that's those are the paragraphs that I've pointed you to, and it goes on down and cites paragraph 76 again. It's talking about why we find petitioner's argument that the axial and diametric options are the most practical here. Even 12 options represent a finite number of options and supports petitioner's position that choosing one of the options Moskowitz describes as standard supports his obviousness argument, citing paragraph 76. And then above was talking about paragraph 77. So, and again, the board more than once indicates that it's basing its decision on the credible expert testimony, which is a nice way of saying we are not crediting the testimony of Sonova's expert, who came in with evidence about it was undesirable.
Can you, Mr. Cernel, emphasized, featured a kind of long timelines narrative about how until your product came along, even though Dormer may have mentioned the possibility of a ring magnet, nobody had been using any such things. Did you have evidence that addressed kind of the real world absence for a seemingly extended period of anybody proposing this before the 2001 here is, I guess, the priority date?
I don't believe there is any evidence of the record addressing that issue. What is different about, I'll just point out that what's different about Dormer than all of the other commercial cochlear implant systems is that Dormer uses a pot core, which is a piece of metal and something that conducts magnetism. So in that way, it's a bit different than what is being done commercially, what was being done commercially with cochlear implants. But also,
is Dormer suggesting the use of a ring magnet in connection with cochlear implants?
It is a cochlear implant. It is a cochlear implant piece of art.
So it's suggesting that the use of a ring magnet in that context is an available option.
Yes, absolutely. It is saying exactly that. I would also point out that.
So I'm just completed. Do you have any evidence or explanation without evidence would be a second best, but either one for why it took so long. Like the cochlear implants, what came in about 20 years before this, 30 years?
It's late 70s, early 80s.
Okay, so we're talking about a two-decade period. And yet, is there some intuitively understandable reason why nobody was doing this?
Well, sometimes in a commercial setting...
I'm not suggesting that makes a legal difference. I'm trying to understand.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, Your Honor. Sometimes in a commercial setting, if something works, you just stick with it until you realize that it's hindering you from solving a different problem. So I don't believe there's been problems with attachment and retention in the industry. What happened with Med-El was there was a recognition there was a problem with putting these patients into MRI machines. And so there had to be a complete... And what was the problem? It was the magnet. And if you put a magnet in the machine, it wants to twist it.
Is that a newly recognized problem? MRIs aren't all that new, are they?
Well, part of the question is, how common are the MRIs? How strong are the MRIs? MRIs have gotten much stronger over the years. They used to be 1.5 Tesla, and then they became 3 Tesla, and now they're 7 Tesla machines. That just means bigger magnetization. Also, the more common it is, it took a while to get an MRI, and you didn't just get one automatically. Now MRIs are super easy to get, very common in many countries. So it's about just looking at the marketplace and looking at what customers might think is important, and that changes over time.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. I also wanted to point out that the patent here, Schmidt, is not a cochlear implant patent. In fact, it doesn't say anything ever about cochlear implants. It's about an implant, and it talks a lot about access ports and inserting medicine and things like that, but it is not, in fact, a cochlear implant patent. I wanted to just come back to this idea of fact question. Some of the questions from your honors ask Mr. Cernel, isn't that a fact question? So I think the big issue here is the board had the responsibility to weigh the evidence.
Can you address the evidence on the objective indicia side of the analysis?
Yes, absolutely. So The board paid it a lot of attention to that evidence. The board did not discard it. And the evidence was that years later, after Med-El developed this MRI-safe magnet, the first one in the industry, Med-El and lots of other people said, wow, this is great. And it was the case that it required rotation of the magnet, and the rotation of the magnet in that embodiment was allowed to happen by diametrically magnetizing the disc magnet and letting it rotate in a case. You're absolutely right about that, that it's actually requires a whole bunch of other things. The key thing here that the board noted and that Med-El noted was that Sonova never actually mapped the claims of the patent to the Med-El product and still hasn't. And Med-El always has taken the position and takes the position today. That is their burden. They have not done that. And they don't get to just say on appeal, oh, well, Med-El has never said otherwise. That's not our job. They have to do that. And what they haven't done, it's very clear, is show that that invention that is so revolutionary, it's not about diametric magnetization. It's about rotation. And think about this. Why does Schmidt have, and why does Dormer have this particular type of magnetization taught? To achieve an alignment so that it stays where it's put, and there's only one way you can put it. Rotation is antithetical to that. Rotation has to throw all that away and say we are not going to achieve that result. Instead, we're going to do a trade-off. We're going to do something important. And so that led to the MRI safe magnet that spins. And now it's industry standard.
Would I assume correctly that when the MRI is turned off, the spinning stops and the realignment occurs?
The MRI isn't turned off ever, but when the patient is taken away, then yes, absolutely. It's really a matter of, I shouldn't say spinning, it's a matter of turning to align with a field, and then when that field disappears, it isn't compelled to turn in that way.
It's not moving in a single plane.
It's not moving, yes. Yeah, it just turns in order to align. I see my time is up, Your Honors. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Cernel, you've got 2 minutes.
So Mr. Timber suggested in response to Judge Toronto's question that this decades-long, like, no one using axial or diametric was just sort of a, well, they picked one and just stuck with it. But what happened when they actually finally did it? Did they say, well, we're just making a different choice now and no big deal? Was it a basic design choice as the board found? Absolutely not. And again, we've got extensive evidence in the record about this being revolutionary, a fundamental design shift, all describing the specific change, the specific question that the board was wrestling with, which was, is this adding of a diametric magnet to a cochlear implant obvious or not?
So there's nothing in your patent about MRIs or rotatability in MRIs, right?
Correct. It's all about transcutaneous connections. And the question is, was that obvious to someone of skill in the art in 2001? And when it was done more than a decade later, again, it was described in these glowing terms as fundamental design shift, fundamentally different, a big leap. There were, in addition to Med-El's commentary, a peer-reviewed article talking about use of a diametric magnet, not talking about rotatability and how it positively impacts patient care. It's really hard to imagine any stronger or more direct secondary consideration evidence than what we have in this case. And in fact, this court's Kinetic Concepts v. Smith and Nephew case tells us that objective considerations like this are most important when we're looking at simple technology, and there's this possibility of lawyers looking at it in hindsight and saying, oh, this seems obvious to me. It's especially important to look at the objective indicia, and I would suggest that here that tells us that this invention was the antithesis of something that was obvious. It was revolutionary, a fundamental design shift, specifically tied to this use of a diametric magnet in the context of a cochlear implant, which was the core obviousness question the board wrestled with.
Okay. Thank you. Thank both counsel for being submitted.